And welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM. You're listening to Wednesday Morning After. The time in studio is 7:35. And I would like to welcome Stefan Christoff in our studio this morning. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning. Thank you.
So I understand you will be doing an interview with Eric Larson about the upcoming launch of Understanding the Crash.
Yes. Eric is a U.S.-based writer and activist for many years, and he'll be launching an excellent graphic book here in Montreal on Friday on the popular response, via activists and community organizations to the financial crisis in the United States since 2008. So Eric is joining us on the line from the U.S. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Stefan.
Thank you, Eric. Maybe can you first give us a quick breakdown on your book, Understanding the Crash, which you co-authored with New York City artist Seth Tobachman. Maybe point out some of the main ideas, themes that you were highlighting in this graphic book.
Sure. This was the first graphic nonfiction book or fiction book that I've worked on, and Seth invited me to basically do the research and the text for the book when it was being planned. Soft Skull Press put it out, and it was an amazing project to work on because, first of all, it gave me the opportunity to work with Seth, who's an amazing comic artist, needs no introduction to a lot of people who know him from War in the Neighborhood and probably 8 or 9 other books that he's done, as well as World War III Illustrated. The idea behind Understanding the Crash was to do two things. First of all, it was to explain in easy-to-understand terms what happened to the U.S. housing market and the mortgage market in the years leading up to the big crisis in 2007 and 2008, why the housing bubble happened, why this incredible superstructure of mortgage-backed securities was created on top of it, who profited, why it was an unstable and unsustainable situation, and why it eventually came crashing down. The other thing we wanted to accomplish with the book is to get away from the kind of coverage we've seen in the corporate media when the crisis was happening and since then, which is to concentrate on the banks and the financial system and the emergency there, and to really more or less ignore what was actually happening to people on the street. Millions of households were lost their homes. The value of their homes in some cases went to zero. These are people who were counting on their homes to be basically their nest egg to fund their retirement. It was a huge financial crisis for working people, ordinary working people, and yet the press seemed to be obsessed with the banks, which in a way was not was understandable because the banks made a horrible mess, which threw the economy into a recession that we're still living through. But there was a kind of a tendency to ignore what was happening on the street. You know, you'd get the occasional photo of somebody's $500,000 home in Florida where algae's growing in the swimming pool and the grass is going crazy and the place is falling apart. The reality is that people in working-class neighborhoods were hugely affected by this, and this was being ignored, so we wanted to cover in the book what happened to those people and their response to it, because there was an amazing response in cities all over the country, from Miami, New York, Cleveland, where people were doing were resisting foreclosures and evictions, or a real sort of grassroots movement developed to keep people in their homes and to stop the sort of social dislocation that the banks had caused. So we wanted to kind of tell the whole story, not just the sort of the kind of inside baseball story of what happened behind closed doors at the Fed to rescue this or that bank, which it's a kind of a financial journalism pornography that pours out of the business press whenever something like this happened. We wanted to get away from that and explain what happened to real people. So that was the idea behind Understanding the Crash.
Now, when you talk about the mortgage crisis in the United States, the book details a lot of stories of people in communities across the country who are dealing in a very real way, as you mentioned, with the financial crisis, and also looked at how people were organizing at a grassroots level within community groups and activist organizations across the United States to address the housing crisis and the larger financial crisis. I remember distinctly there was stories in the book about communities in Cleveland who were dealing with the financial crisis, and also stories of communities in Florida who were fighting against the basically the appropriation of their own houses. Can you maybe give us a bit of a picture as to the stories that this book tells?
Yeah, you get, for example, the story of a remarkable woman in Florida named Mary Falvey, who had a large extended family, and had her husband was disabled. She was making her living, basically, along with a couple of her kids, delivering newspapers. And she had a second mortgage on the house, which was often the case. Banks would come to you with the idea of taking some money out of the house for your living expenses. You get an interest rate which balloons or gets jacked up when underlying interest rates increase. Suddenly you find that your home is unaffordable. Banks get into trouble, and so they start to foreclose. Mary Falvey got a notice of eviction from her bank. The community rallied around her. She was actually very active in the community. She was active in the Obama campaign in 2008. She had good contacts with community organizers. And people from the community came the morning that she was to lose her home and did essentially a defense, would not let the sheriff's office into to evict her. Eventually, she was allowed to stay. In fact, in the case of Miami, it was interesting, the chief of police there at one point announced that he was not going to do any more evictions because it didn't make sense to essentially render a chunk of the community homeless. It was not a good use of the police force's time. And that was a more dramatic incident than we've seen in a lot of places, but the idea has spread. There's a wonderful group in Miami called Take Back the Land. And their website is worth checking out. Their sort of statement of principles and what they're trying to accomplish is really inspiring. And other groups around the country begin to do somewhat similar things. So you get some really amazing stories of what's happened to real people. I think the message is at this point is that these kind of campaigns have to dig in for the long haul. They have to. We saw in a way a kind of a harbinger of it with what happened in the Ninth Ward with Hurricane Katrina. There was a lot of pressure from banks and their supporters, believe it or not, there are such people in this country, to treat the mortgage crisis as kind of like a hurricane, an opportunity to sweep away the bad debt and sweep away the people who were perhaps not the people we want to have in these homes and start over again, new wave of redevelopment. That hasn't happened, in part because people have resisted it. So that gives you a little bit of a slice of what's been going on we talk about in the book.
Now, you worked for many, many years on the ground in New York City as an activist. Also, you're a writer. One of the interesting things that we've seen emerge from the Occupy Wall Street movement across the United States has been efforts to defend people's homes from foreclosure that you pointed to when you were talking about one of the stories in the book that you'll be launching here in Montreal on Friday, Understanding the Crash. Can you maybe give a bit of commentary from your perspective as a longtime activist, community activist in New York and in the U.S. as to this shift from Zuccotti Park, where Occupy Wall Street took place, to more grassroots activism at a community-based level? We saw a lot of activities around foreclosure of housing in Brooklyn, for example.
Yes. Are you talking about specifically against foreclosures or just or wider ranging community activism?
Both.
Okay. The Occupy movement. It's in a kind of a transitional period right now because a lot of the initial sort of Occupy actions have been broken up or ended. I think that this is a necessary period. There's been a number of actions you mentioned in Brooklyn, for example, eviction resistance, and some of that I was very interested. Some of that happened in the wake of the Occupy Wall Street actions in Zuccotti Park, because it was sort of like we're not in Zuccotti Park now anymore. We need to do something else. What needs to be done? And what was happening in Brooklyn, there was resistance already going on, but it enabled the movement to focus more attention on these specific problems as opposed to for lack of a better word, a more symbolic sort of occupation. There's plans now for a nationwide strike on May 1st in the United States. That would be unprecedented in that May 1st has not been a sort of a quote-unquote official sanctioned labor day of action for many, many decades in this country. The important thing here is that it allows people to get creative and to counter some of the criticism of Occupy, which is, to put it really crude terms, this is a bunch of middle-class white kids who are occupying a public space and getting a lot of attention, but they don't have any demands, they're not doing anything concrete. What does this really mean? And what the movement is trying to do now is to flesh that out and to build roots into the community and put itself at the service of people who really are in desperate need. And so that's what's kind of inspiring about this period. And that's how, Occupy has an opportunity to take events like eviction resistance and turn them into much bigger causes and movements.
Just a few more questions for you, Eric. Now, as a longtime writer, you've written articles for publications in the U.S., across the U.S., The Nation magazine, Huffington Post, The Independent Project in New York. I'm wondering if you could comment a bit artistically on how it was to write a book on a subject that a lot of people would associate with, statistics, graphs. We're talking about the financial crisis in the U.S. I mean, the book Understanding the Crash does get into, very a specific breakdown as to how the financial crisis in the United States affected people's lives. But it does it, as you mentioned before, via illustrations, drawings. So how was that process of putting together a book on the financial crisis, but rooted in art?
I would say that just as a writer, who's somebody who thinks sort of in verbal terms, as opposed to visual terms, when I'm creating something, working with Seth and to do Understanding the Crash was, I think the word is inspiring. You struggle to use really precise language to explain complicated financial transactions and the consequences of them to people. But when you can use images to get the point across, it's incredibly powerful. It's one thing to talk about mortgages and to talk about different kinds of collateralized mortgage obligations and fixed-rate mortgages and variable-rate mortgages and all this sort of thing. But when you can actually see an illustration of a sausage grinder turning out sausages, which are mortgages, and then you see a graph which shows the interest rates going up, and it's illustrated with sausages or something like that. It sounds a little hokey, but it becomes immediately clear to people. I think graphic nonfiction format is an amazing way. It's an incredibly powerful way to get these kind of ideas across to people. Problem of the mortgage system and the financial system in general is that it's incredibly arcane. You have financial products that are put together that only the person who designed them understands and are built, frankly, only to benefit that person. And it's very hard in just words and sentences to describe this. You get a really talented cartoonist involved who can come up with visual metaphors for these things, and it's much easier for people to understand. It becomes really clear, and so I think it's a very powerful tool that we ought to be using a lot more.
Now, Eric, you write on many subjects. Beyond understanding the crash, you have a new book that is just coming out called The People's Pension, which looks at Social Security in the U.S. Over a couple of decades. Can you maybe talk a bit about your new book and how the themes and the topics of that book address current political realities in the U.S. as we approach the 2012 presidential election?
Sure. The book is The People's Pension, The Struggle to Defend Social Security Since Reagan, and it's coming out from AK Press at the end of this month. I think that it ties in very closely with what we were doing with Understanding the Crash, even though it's not a graphic book, because essentially there is in this country, in the United States, a retirement crisis that has to do with sort of the shredding of the safety net for people who are seniors or are entering their non-working years. Lots of programs for these people have been cut. Social Security, of course, and Medicare are the big New Deal, Great Society programs that were set up in the 30s and then in the 60s to make sure that the elderly in the United States have an adequate income and are not bankrupted by their health care costs. Those programs have been under attack for decades now, and my book tells the story of the attacks on Social Security and the response from grassroots organizers, labor unions, progressive lawmakers, and seniors themselves, who are an incredible activist community here, to resist the efforts to destroy these programs that they need. And it's a little bit comparable in a way to the student strike, which you've got going on in Quebec now, which is an incredibly inspiring movement, where you have people basically going out of schools to protest tuition hikes, unreasonable tuition hikes. In the U.S., people pay premiums for their Medicare coverage, the hospitalization part that's sort of the core of that program. Those premiums have been going up for years. Healthcare costs in this country are skyrocketing. As everybody knows, the United States has a dysfunctional healthcare system. But any attempt to alleviate that encounters fierce resistance from the right. And what I try to do in The People's Pension is to basically tell the story, refute the arguments against Social Security, and to really read back into the history of it the resistance that has gone on efforts by literally every president since Jimmy Carter has attempted, at least toyed with the idea of cutting Social Security, slashing the benefits. It actually was done by Democrats and Republicans together under Reagan, and they're trying to do it again. The Obama administration was willing to make a deal last year to cut Social Security, and we regularly see very strong resistance, which causes the political leaders in this country to back down. But what I wanted to do in the book is tell that story and also to kind of give an idea of what it would take to stop this cycle from continuing. How do we break this cycle of continual efforts by the Washington elite to take benefits away from people that they've earned? So that's a little bit of an idea of what's behind The People's Pension.
And you have a website for the book.
Yeah, there's a couple ways to access it. I have a blog called The People's Pension. You can Google Eric Larson, People's Pension. Also, AK Press has a page devoted to the book, and there'll be a lot more at the end of the month. It's available on Amazon and so forth. So end of commercial.
Yeah, just a final question. You mentioned the student strike taking place right now here in Quebec. Around 200,000 students are currently on strike. There is a huge effort underway to sustain the strike. And across the city right now in Montreal, there's a lot of posters coming up, being put up on the street, made by various student committees, student artists at different universities who have been creating artwork to explain, articulate the demands of this very grassroots mass movement that's taking place. As a longtime activist, I'm wondering if you have any first commentary about the strike from the United States, the Quebec student strike. And second of all, given that you co-authored this book with legendary street artist Seth Tobachman from New York, I'm wondering if you have any reflections on the role of posters in social movements.
Incredibly powerful, incredibly powerful. Like I said, the student strike is inspiring to an activist from the United States because the sheer numbers, 200,000 students out on strike, that's something that we don't see here. And in some ways, the activist community in this country, the unfortunate thing is on some levels it continues to have to reinvent itself every time something happens, whereas in Quebec and other places, there's much more of a sort of a continuous live tradition. Posters incredibly important. I mean, on a slightly different level, the poster that was created of Obama in 2008 by a street artist and that was seen everywhere was a powerful tool that the Obama administration had nothing to do with, and in my opinion, has not lived up to since then. But it made him immediately an iconic figure. We've seen this also in New York. Graphic art, posters, flyers are kind of a lifeblood for activism. They circulate in the activist community. They pull people in from the outside, and it's absolutely vital getting a crew of people together who can put up posters, keep them up, keep renewing them. Come up with new designs. The whole graphic element of it is really powerful and important. So it's great to hear that in Montreal you've got something really active going that way.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning, Eric, and we'll see you on Friday in Montreal.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Stefan.
Thanks. We've been speaking with author and writer Eric Larson in the U.S., based for many, many years in New York City. Eric has co-authored a book called Understanding the Crash with writer and street artist Seth Tobachman. Eric also is just coming out with another book and AK Press, via AK Press in San Francisco, called The People's Pension, looking at attempts to undermine social security systems in the U.S. Eric Larson will be launching Understanding the Crash here in Montreal on Friday at La Plante, which is at 185 Van Horn. The doors are at 8. There'll be a performance involving two musicians from New York City, a quartet, a local group called Marathon, and the anarchist street marching band who many people have seen across the student demonstrations in recent weeks. The group is called the Chaotic Insurrection Ensemble. Eric will also be speaking from 3 till 5 p.m. On April 7th at Casa del Popolo at 4873 Saint Laurent on his work and his writing. And this is the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT. Thanks so much.